Welcome to episode 162 of Coffee Pods and Wads, as always sponsored by Rain Body Fuel, the ultimate fitness focused drink to support your performance. And the Hybrid Academy are also on board, offering you a discount on their site with the code PODS10. You can go to thehybridacademy.store to avail of that discount, and you can head to their Instagram or their website to see why I keep telling everyone about them. And I think they have some new gear coming in soon as well, so keep an eye out. Today's guests are Pete and Fee from CrossFit Delta Fox in the UK, which hosts the 180 Project. The 180 Project is a program aimed at helping those who need it in order to recover or reintegrate, whether it's from addiction or the criminal justice system, and it's done through CrossFit and group sessions. Pete recently completed 100 triathlons in 100 days to raise funds and awareness for the project. We chat about that, the project itself, how it came about, how it became part of Delta Fox. You can find out more at 180project.co.uk or at 180 Project UK on Instagram. Enjoy, listen, share, and tag. Thanks, William, for doing this. I appreciate you taking the time out. It's rare that I interview two people at the same time, especially when those two people are in the same room. Usually, I've interviewed multiple people on Zoom or whatever, which is a fucking nightmare because everyone just interrupts each other. So at least you can kick each other because you're beside each other, so you can be like, shut up, I want to talk. I suppose we'll follow the usual trend of the show and start off talking about coffee. So whereabouts in the UK are you based?
So we're near Blackburn, aren't we? It pains me to say that because I'm a Burnley fan and that's like a local Blackburn,
okay.
But we are Lancashire.
Yeah. I was going to slag you off about Fulham winning 7-0 last night.
Yeah, but you're not Blackburn fan. No, I was safe.
Okay, that's fine. And is there... are you in a town or are you on the outskirts? Or
yeah, it's called Darwin. So it's a small town within sort of Blackburn. And
oh, in Australia?
Yeah, I wish.
The coffee must be amazing there then. you've done spoken and written interviews over the last while, especially around the finale of the fundraiser, I suppose, which we'll speak about later on. But is that like, so I suppose, Pete, I read about you in Morning Chalk Up and you were both on Chalking Fitness recently as well. Like, is it something that you find jarring to do, or is it maybe easier because it's something that you're passionate about and that you're, you know, like in the middle of?
A bit of both, really. It's uncomfortable talking about yourself. It sounds like you're trying to blow your own trumpet, but it doesn't sit right. But when you're talking about like the 180 Project and the actual challenge, it's hard not to be passionate and enjoy the process of that. But talking about myself, no, don't like that bit.
Oh, I've got a few questions that are just about you. Do you listen to podcasts as well?
Yeah. I love a podcast on the way to work.
Yeah.
What are your go-to?
I'm listening to My Dad Wrote Porno. As I read that, as I said that out loud, I thought, is this the right format? But it's a comedy podcast that I absolutely love it.
My wife listened to that on the way to work. She's a bit of a drive to work, so she's on mat leave now, but she used to listen to it. I haven't listened to it myself, but I've heard it's good.
And I like the Ben Bergeron podcast, Chasing Excellence. I've sort of go in and out of episodes of that just for the CrossFit side of things, and obviously like yourself and Chalking Fitness as well.
You're fucking Ben has a new book coming out, actually.
Yeah.
The person that wrote it with him is coming up on this. She was supposed to be on it. She was supposed to be on this week, but she had talked about stuff that she wasn't allowed to talk about yet. So he said we'd hold off because she has the other projects coming out and stuff. And Patrick, that does the podcast with Ben, is coming on as well. So yeah, no, it's a nice setup they've got. What about you, Fida? What are your go to listens?
Oh, I listen to a lot of like mindfulness. The calm, not whatever came out of your mouth.
Same, but different.
Yeah, because I listen more to go to bed, like to relax my mind.
What do you call them? Like calm, like those kind of ones where it's like, it's literally telling you how to relax or like.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I listen to Stuff You Should Know when I'm going to bed. It's just an inane, like, there's just random topics. But then I get caught out sometimes where I actually become interested in whatever they're talking about. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to be away for an extra hour now, like, listening to this. Yeah, no, they can be a good one. I got really into binaural beats for a while. It's like, I don't know, did you see James Newbery talked about it, about, like, maybe 18 months ago or 2 years ago. And it's like, there's playlists on Spotify that are like 40 hours long, but it's like weird. It's not dissimilar from whale music, but it's like, apparently it mimics the, or it aids the stages of sleep that you go through. So like, there's like a prolonged period where like you're falling asleep, like, and it matches that stage. I suppose if you fall asleep quickly, you're fucked. But, as you sleep, then it matches, or it's supposed to like encourage you to go into deep sleep and then encourage you to go into REM or whatever, by the way that the sounds are playing. I listened to it for, I'd say I listened to it for about 2 months, got absolutely no benefit from it. And then we had a baby and we had, you know, those white noise machines.
Yeah.
That did the trick. Yeah. She like, cause that was on when like trying to get her to sleep. And then I used to like, we'd get into bed, and my wife would be feeding her before she puts it down. I'd be like, put on the white noise there, will you? She's like, that's for the baby. And I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, for the baby, yeah. Just put it on for her. Yeah. So, Pete, how did you first discover CrossFit?
It was actually through Battle Cancer. We Scott and I, when we set up Battle Cancer, just prior to that, we were powerlifting. And we had a powerlifting charity event. And we invited people to come along, very similar format to what we just did last weekend with the triathlon. So people could come and do it alongside us. It was just basically a deadlift challenge. And I remember a sea of people in matching like t-shirts and like fancy dress, pretty much rocking up. And they were from a local CrossFit box, and they were all just getting stuck in. There were people from all walks of life, different ages, but yet they're all doing these deadlifts as one big team. And as powerlifters, that was like really alien. That's not how powerlifting works. It's very individual sport. And we sort of like, that, our attention was diverted to that. And then Battle Cancer was born, and we just joined our local affiliate, and then sort of just fell in love with the process, and it kind of evolved from there.
What year are we talking there?
Ooh, 2017.
And you're a coach now?
Yes. Yeah.
So how long after starting to understand what CrossFit was did you like aspire to be a coach, or like did you just sort of fall into it, or how did
that happen? kind of fell into it, if I'm honest. And I'm only like a recently qualified coach helping out here at Delta Fox. So I kind of, when I joined CrossFit, I was probably not far off 20 stone, out of breath walking upstairs, that type of thing. But as I started getting fitter and I fell in love with the ethos of it all, I sort of grew that passion for wanting to help people that are new to the sport, people that like me when I joined. And then it natural progression was to take up the coaching role, and yeah, sort of been coaching at CrossFit Delta Fox.
I was looking at their website, the gym's website, and there's like a Meet Our Team page, and there's like a novella about each person like on the team, and then there's one guy at the end, like, I think his name is Jason, I can't remember, and it's just blank. And I felt so sorry for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's very brand new. We call him Handsome Dan. He's
because I was like oh god, like they're very qualified, and I was like, oh, that's interesting now. But then I was like, oh, this guy apparently just has no personality, or no, he's never achieved anything in his life.
He has the best personality. His face speaks for it all. If you saw him, you'd probably...
The ladies like him, that's...
He doesn't need words. So you mentioned that you're involved in Battle Cancer. Are you still involved with that, or have you kind of stepped away from
it?
Yeah,
I'm still involved, but mainly from the Battle Cancer program point of view. So outside the events, we started shifting the focus towards getting people that have been through any form of cancer care at any stage of their life, getting them back into the gym, following that again, that community working out relationship, and So I'm one of the coaches for the Battle Cancer Program. So I'm a bit more hands-on with that side of things. That's delivering the content, which has been, it's been a good challenge for me. And it's been nice because we've just finished the first one, 12 weeks long. And my own dad was on it as well. So I got to coach my dad, which was interesting. So I could tell him off for a change rather than inside of me. But so from that point of view, involved in the program.
And like I've had Scott on, and he was talking about the event side of things, I suppose. And like he was beaming about the growth from, I suppose, like you mentioned, a sort of small like community event into this monster that's like spanning the globe and now is licensed by CrossFit and everything else. Like if you were starting something like that again, is there things that you do drastically differently, or is the pride in where it is enough to kind of smooth over the journey to get there, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And the journey is what's made it interesting. Like Scott and I have known each other for a number of years, and we used to constantly work together. We'd be on the phone, bouncing ideas, and parts of the ideas we're adding wouldn't work. And a couple of years down the line, they would. Like the relationship with CrossFit, we wanted that, but we didn't think it would actually happen. Change of sort of ownership and managerial style of CrossFit, they've opened the doors now to the likes of Battle Cancer. It's been a rough journey, and Scott in particular, Freya, and the team, the amount of work that they're putting on a daily basis is like, it's phenomenal. So every time they come up with a new announcement or a new partnership or another country that they're going into, it's because of just the days and days and hours of graft putting into the program and the event. It's phenomenal.
And you're a policeman as well, is that right?
I am, yeah.
And what's your title?
Like, well, I'm a detective in Great Manchester Police. So I've been in the police for about 17 years. I like to look at you then, like, 17 years. So I joined when I was 18. Way too young to be. I had no business being a policeman at 18 year old, but yeah, so that's my full time.
I'm trying to think of how to phrase it so I don't want to sound like an asshole, but I can't think of anything other than say area of detection. What crimes are you trying to detect?
It's serious crime. That's very broad. Anything really. Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been a detective?
The majority of my years in the police was in firearms. And then from then I've probably last 6 years a detective.
So like the entire time you've been with Battle Cancer and coaching, you've also been a detective.
Yes. Yeah.
So like, is that a different, like, is that hard to balance? Like, is it hard to, like, what are your hours like for, say, like work, like, you know, like career?
I kind of work 10-hour shifts. Like a lot of people in the public services, sometimes it can be more depending on what's happening. But for me, it's,
it can be less if you play your cards right.
It's a nice balance for me. Yeah, my days can be long and busy, but this for me is not work, which sounds really true.
Like a lot of people go, like, they'll work.
Yeah.
And then they leave work and they go to the gym, and that's their hour to decompress or to switch off or to stress themselves out in a different way, I suppose, so that stress doesn't affect them as badly. But like, you're leaving work to go to work. Like, are there days where you just can't be arsed? Like, is it like if you're leaving work after 10 hours and you're like, oh, I have to go and coach like deadlift or whatever. Like, is there days where you're just not fussed?
Do you know what? This is going to sound really sad, but I've not had one day like that. Like today, I started work. This morning, I finished, I come straight to the box, coach the weightlifting class, but I get to see friends, I get to switch off from a day job, as I think about what I've done for the last 10 hours or so, and I get to be surrounded by just positivity, again, really cheesy, but you know what it's like in a CrossFit gym, everyone wants to be there, so that's quite infectious, so it's never felt like work, and I'll go on tonight and I'll sleep well because I'm tired, but and I'm back at work tomorrow, but yeah, it's not, it just doesn't feel like a chore. It certainly doesn't feel like work. It's like this is my hobby. This is like sort of the passion, if you will.
Yeah, no, I can empathize with that a bit. Project 180 itself then, so the purpose behind your recent fundraising, So I suppose, Fee, like, what is Project 180, or like, or who does it serve, or how does it serve them?
So it's a project that aims to bless individuals. It wants to change the perception that people have on addiction and crime. I think it's so easy to judge somebody, you know, we all do it, and think, oh, you know, it's their own fault, and you can put it down, it's willpower. But people don't choose to live that life. And we want to help mend their families, help them become the best version of themselves, and then hopefully, you know, mend the communities on a wider level, and, you know, integrate them. We integrate them, the participants that we have now, into the mainstream gym. You know, I've said it before, you could walk into the gym and you probably would be able to, like, point and say, oh, I know, they're from 180, they're from the gym. You know, it's a pool of people who would never, you know, cross paths. You know, Pete's a police officer and he trains with, like, the 180 guys. And if you'd have said to someone, oh, you're going to train with a police officer, or to a police officer, you're going to train with, you know, someone who's been in crime the whole life and in and out of prison, you might be like, oh, but you wouldn't know. And that's the beauty of 180, is that it's, you know, people are just developing, and it's great. It's really great.
And how does it work then? So say, like, are you, like, does the project reach out through other organizations to find people that might be interested in joining, or do people who might be interested in joining, because it doesn't seem like a thing that a lot of people who are suffering with addiction would think, do you know what, I'm gonna go and join a gym, that'll fix things. Like, it strikes me as the traffic runs the other way, maybe.
Yeah, so we have a lot of partners, like local partners and services, who will refer their clients, but, you know, there's also a self-referral process where, like, members of the public can call up. And I think what you said there was about that, you know, they're joining the gym, and it's, we tell them from day dot, you know, whilst they are in the gym, like, the gym's their therapy room. So they work out three times a week, and then an hour a week, they come into, like, a group work setting. And that's where they do all the, you know, because in a workout, you mentally, you want to give up, and you think, I can't do this, I'm not good enough for this, they're better. So all that stuff that's going on in their heads, like the inner critic, and we bring them into a group setting. We talk about it, we overcome it. We talk about real life situations, and we tell them, you know, if you can get through 1,000 burpees, you can get through this that you'll face, you know, on the outside, any challenges. It's about drilling that mindset and helping them realize that they are worthy and they can achieve, kind of disregarding everything else they've ever been told, dropping them labels completely.
And, like, at what stage of, is it, like, we'll say people who are recovered, or like are starting their recovery, are, like, is there a specific point on the recovery journey that people would ideally need to be at before this would work for them? Like, are there stages that they'd need to, like, hurdles they'd need to have crossed beforehand, do you think?
No, not really. You know, it's like, you could have someone walk through the door that's been sober for 3 or 4 days. We do have assessment periods, but obviously, you know, we could assess someone and they might relapse, but, it, you know, we speak to them, we kind of figure out where they're at, are they ready? Because, you know, you've got to remember, they've got all sorts going on, and they might be linked with other services, and, it, you know, we don't want to give them too much at one time. So there's a process behind it, so that it can't damage, you know, any progress they're already making, or make things difficult at all. But no, we don't. If someone needs our help, then we'll help them, no matter where.
Have you got, like what's, we'll say, the retention rate? As in, like, is it, like, close to 100% of people who, like, started, like, are, like you say, are kind of, what would you call it, like, enveloped by the main gym community? Or is it, like, 50-50? Like, you know, is there a high retention rate, we'll say?
I think you always lose a couple along the way. But we retain quite a lot of the guys and the girls. And I think that's because of the whole wraparound support that they get. You know, if you were just offering a workout, like you say, they might just think, oh, I'll join another gym. But, you know, they can come to community workouts. You know, you can come to our commercial, the Delta Fox events. You know, we try and promote and want them to get involved in everything that we offer. to bring them to this safe, healthy community, to give them new positive influences. So it's, you know, it's like they look at them and think, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to do a pull-up like that. I want to do this next competition, or, you know, sit in the cafe and eat a meal with the guys. It's, yeah, probably say it's pretty, I'd probably say around 60-70%, I think, off the top of my head. I could be wrong.
Yeah. It's just the human side of it, I suppose, really, isn't it? It's like people relearning that they're human, and then relearning that the basic, you mentioned there, like the basic, I suppose, human impulses of like, I want to be able to do what that person's doing, or like, I want to be part of something. Like, I think a lot of people go through it, especially people who I think find CrossFit or find like community based sports, like later on, kind of don't understand the importance of the community aspect of it until they're in it. And then, like, I was like that, where I never played sport growing up, and then when I started CrossFit, I was like, oh shit, I get it. Like, you know, after like years of being like, oh, it's bullshit, like, who needs it? And then when you're in it, you're like, oh fuck, like, yeah, it totally makes sense. Like, yeah, no, it's great. So like, CrossFit and fitness seem I suppose synonymous with fundraising, where like, whether it's a 5k run or like Murph every day for a month, or, you know, challenging other people to do runs and donate and stuff. I suppose I read about what you were doing or what you're planning to do, and it's kind of one of those things where you kind of skim past and you're like, oh whatever, and then you're like, what? You kind of go back and read it a second time. So you did 100 triathlons based off, I suppose, the machines that you'd find in most CrossFit gyms predominantly. So like, did something happen that led to, okay, we need to do fundraising? Or was it just something that, like how did it come about that, I suppose, fundraising and a fundraising event was identified as being needed? And then what series of unfortunate circumstances transpired that led you to land on 100 triathlons?
Well, due to the nature of how 180 works, fundraising's at the heart of it. And like I said, without fundraising, it becomes very difficult to run. So once a year, I like to do a personal challenge. And last year, we did the 36 hours rowing. And I wasn't part of this gym then, but I was in and out of the 180 project helping out. So I was at a different gym.
Was that through work that you got involved with 180, or how did you become aware of it?
It was through a different affiliate. Just got friends with people that were aware of the 180 project, and from a policing perspective, I thought it was interesting. And I remember my first session where we kind of invite people to come along from law enforcement, from police, to come and see Black CrossFitters. And I remember walking in, and one of my best friends, who sadly isn't here anymore, but he was one of the participants of the 180 project. Wow. And I didn't know. And I've known him like since we were kids. I didn't even know he had a problem with alcohol. And I said, sadly, he wasn't one that sort of survived the journey, if you will. And 180 was very in its infancy at that stage. So from then on, it came really close to me, and it changed the way that I policed and how I sort of thought about people that I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis, rather than one track mind over them versus us. But it became a bit of a passion for me, and the fundraising is kind of naturally linked to 180 all the time. But if I come up with a challenge, can it help return back to the 180? And the triathlons just came about just through probably bad timing, really, in the sense of it pops up on a program, I'm part of the GST program, and I remember it, it was in May time, and it was just a random workout, and it was a long one, and the directions were, look, just get three machines out and just go, don't sell your soul, just go for it. And I remember finishing it thinking, I really enjoyed that, and it would make a good charity challenge, because if anyone can do it, like I say, you just need three bits of kit that you'd find at any box. You can grab some buddies and do it with them, or just do it as a bit of a mental challenge for yourself. Just headphones in, get down, get to work. And it started off thinking, I'll do 30 of them. And then I thought, that doesn't sound good. I'll do 50. And then I thought, well, that doesn't sound good. And it evolved into 100 days. And that's because I remember watching, I don't know if you've seen it, one of the episodes of the Buttery Bros on YouTube. There was is it the Iron Cowboy? The guy obviously real triathlon. It's not like the ones I was doing. They did 100 in 100 days. And I remember watching it, that's mental. But this was during the time I was developing the idea. And I thought, do you know what? I'll just do 100 in 100 days. Obviously, I had a nice watered down version. But so that's how it kind of came about.
And what were the distances? Like, what machines did you use and what were the distances you did?
So it was rowing 7K, air bike 300 calories, or a Concept 2 bike 15K. Finishing off on the ski 5K. So they're like sprint triathlons.
Yeah.
So they're like, you know, they're about an hour and a half on average, bit of work. But the idea was to be able to make sure I could get that in every day. On top of
that, and did you do like one a day, or did you ever do like, oh shit, I'm busy on Monday, I'll do two?
Yeah, yeah. So I've done a few competitions in that period after the Battle Cancer Manchester. So obviously there's nowhere on earth I would do a triathlon, but I doubled up. I did 2 a day.
Yeah.
So I was always adamant that the 31st of October would be my 100th triathlon.
How many did you have to do on, because I know you did a bit of a lock-in.
Yeah.
how many did you have to do at the end?
Typical me, I always change the goalposts. So we wanted to end with a bit of a bang. So when I got to 85, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stop for like a week, and on the 31st of October, we're going to have this lock-in. So I'll have to complete 15 and just stay until it's done. But we can invite members down, people on the 180 program, like the recent graduates, also back up to friends and supporters, the members of Delta Fox, and just invite people to do them alongside. And but with that being said, we decided, obviously, we'd have my 100 running.
You decided.
Well, I said 100. But parallel to that, we'd try and do another 80 as a collective for the gym on top of my 100, to make it obviously 180 for the 180 project. But we had no idea how long it would take. So we kind of said, Friday night, lock ourselves in, and we'll keep going until we're done.
And I think it was amazing because it's like one of the guys who graduated the last cohort was cooking for everyone.
Oh, yeah, he was, yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
He said when he came, he loved to cook. So it comes back to that, you know, they're getting integrated and, you know, career pathways, opportunities, doing that kind of thing for everyone at Delta Fox, and the food was,
yeah.
He's a great cook, I must say, he's very good. And the, you know, the atmosphere was electric. So many people came down to support, even, you know, it's like we did a comp with River Mersey, I think. Was there a couple of the guys that came up from there, from Pendle. So it just shows you, you know, how passionate and how brilliant people are to come and help us support many more people to come in the programme.
And when you finished it, was there like, I'm always curious when people finish like huge undertakings or, you know, like big challenges and stuff that like, I remember seeing, I could claim that I read this, but I just watched it on closed captions on Instagram. But someone said they were like talking about enjoying the process, and they were saying how, you know, you might work towards something for 5 years, and when you cross the finish line, it lasts like a second and a half. That it's, you know, like the crossing of the finish line like is a blip on the whole map of it. So like, is there an anti-climax when you finish something, or is like, are you, because if you're talking about like challenges and doing different challenges and stuff, I kind of feel like dust doesn't settle too long before you're thinking like, oh, I wonder what I could do next. Like, or like, do you allow yourself to feel good about what you've done, or is it a bit of a letdown when something that has been a huge, like far away checkered flag is suddenly over?
No, that's exactly what it was. And I didn't know how I would feel finishing the last one. And for the last few days, if I'm being honest, it has felt a bit like, you know, you're a bit lost. You've been doing something every day. So, it's a bit of an anticlimax feeling. So I'm trying to, well, over today, yesterday and tomorrow, taking the moments, stepping back from training, not going too crazy, but just trying to absorb what we did. And it's nice been speaking to the members, the ones that took part in it, getting their feedback as well. So you kind of see it from their perspective and how positive it was. But for me, when you do that last one, it was bittersweet. It was a really strange feeling because we still had four left to do. So when I finished my last one, there was still four left to do to hit 180. So I was able to spend that last hour watching the other people completing it. So that was nice. And it's that competitive feeling. It was sort of people like bouncing off one another. Yeah. But yeah, so I already am thinking, do I just think about the next challenge or do I just sit back a little bit? Let's see. The idea, obviously, fundraising is priority, but it's raising awareness to what's going on here and how powerful this project is. And obviously, even like just this, what we're doing now, this for us is like gold dust because we wouldn't get the opportunity ordinarily to try and, you know, blow the trumpet and ring the bell about this project. So just trying to ride this wave a little bit. And if there's any way of raising awareness, then that's job done.
Well, I think we didn't get the outcome we wanted from the fundraising, but I think...
What do you mean by that, you didn't get the outcome you wanted?
Well, I think we wanted to raise a lot of money. I think we came just under 3,000, which is amazing. But like, you know, we have to fund ourselves because we're a community interest company. The funds come from either, you know, funding from like the local council or... so a lot of it is we have to kind of do it ourselves. What I think, like Pete said, what came from it was, you know, everyone coming together, a little bit of like awareness. It's like people are now talking about 180. We've had two podcasts recently, which is brilliant, enabling us to speak around it. And, you know, I think we've even made contacts in America, which is absolutely amazing, with the guys who have kind of launched CrossFit over there in their prisons. I think it's in Colorado. So that's currently been, they call it the prison project. I think that's what's happening. So hopefully we can kind of replicate what they've done in the US, in the UK prison. So, you know, we might not have got what we wanted in monetary value, but I think we just like kind of boomed. The name's there now, people are talking. Yeah.
It's that exposure, and that's quite really valuable. And I say that the dialogue in America has been quite interesting, and to see ideas can be shared and developed rather than just being a UK problem, not problem, UK project and an American one. Sharing ideas.
Because there's people in them, there's gyms in America that have been doing this for years, like that have had this. I've heard of, on Savannah's show, I've heard them talking about, like, you know, a couple of different places where it's, you know, there's a couple of different places where it's recovering addicts only. And then there's other places where they, you know, attempt to do what you're attempting to do, where you integrate both communities together, I suppose. But like, yeah, it's remarkable one because it's kind of, it's something that you don't think about. Like, you know, I think I feel like I must be in the majority, but that's probably my own ignorance speaking, where I've never, like me or anyone I know has never been affected by addiction, like directly or indirectly, that I know of anyway. So it's kind of like, it's a weird one that it's something that wouldn't enter my realm of consciousness very often. And I would be guilty, like you're saying at the start, of like seeing, oh, it's their own fault, or like, I probably wouldn't actually think that or say that, but I'd be closer to that line than the line of, like, you know, queuing up in a gym for food that's been cooked by someone who completed the project. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't, like, I'd find it kind of jarring to, I don't know, process it, I suppose, of like, you know, I think all my understanding of addiction and my understanding of people who are afflicted with addiction comes from like TV shows, comes from movies, like documentaries, which is never going to shine a positive light on it. And it's never going to, like, you know, it's never going to show you the human side of it that you're talking about, I guess, like, or it rarely does anyway.
It's like things is to engineer these bigger conversations because, you know, you can't expect people to understand if they've never been exposed to it. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to break that stigma and change the lens and help people understand that it's really not choice. It's far from it.
And is there other versions of what you're doing in the UK, or are you the only one, do you think?
We're the only one, I think. I'm pretty sure we are.
And is there aspirations to, like, what would be the word? Like, synthesize it or whatever, you know, like spread it out into different areas.
Yeah, so I think that's you know.
I think I just made up the word synthesize. Yeah. I don't think that's a word.
Well, I think
I started off with syndicate, and then I just like vomited the rest.
That's the reason, kind of like when I said about the one of the outcomes of the fundraising was the exposure. I think that, you know, it's like other boxes are interested. So hopefully, what can happen is we can kind of replicate the program in other regions with other affiliates. So it's yeah. You know, so it's national, and that we're helping everyone from every area possible.
And do you think that, like, say, if you, I don't know, if like a gym in London or whatever was like, oh, like that, you know, this is a problem, this is a problematic area where we're based, and you know, we'd like to do something, whatever. Like, I assume it's not as straightforward as we have a coach and we have equipment, we can have people in. I assume you'd need like counselors or people with training or people willing to be trained, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think we've been in like more of a test and learn approach for about probably 4 to 5 years now. So we know what works and what doesn't, which helps when yeah. it comes to, you know, getting bigger and going to these other places and building 180 around the UK, because we've learned, we've trialed it. And I mean, we still are in that process sometimes, you know, we're constantly developing group work sessions and what we offer on the gym floor. But it would, because of that 4 to 5 year period of that test and learn, it's, it would be much easier to go and have a conversation with, let's say, someone from London and say, well, you know, we know this works, this is what, this is how we can help you offer this, and just kind of build capacity, I think.
And is there an opportunity further down the line, or is there a hoops that you have to jump through, or is it never going to happen where it could be a government funded project, or like partially even?
Well, I like to hope so. I like to hope for the best, so we can.
Is there like prior for it? Like, is there similar things that they've invested in?
Well, I know that our local government have invested, you know, time and money into the project. So I suppose that, you know, if we were to get larger and develop, that it would kind of be like a domino effect where, you know,
yeah.
invest and help us. Them.
And were you doing CrossFit and thought, oh, this would be good for people who need routine and who need community and stuff, or were you not doing CrossFit and looking for something that would help what you were doing outside of CrossFit?
So I think it started with a group of like volunteers who were in recovery themselves, and they like you said, they thought this will be good, you know, this will give them structure, it helps them to kind of, you know, once you're looking at your body, it's like you want to look at everything else, you know, if your body's right, you want to look at your mind and everything emotional. Mm. So it started with those guys and the people in the criminal justice system as well, coming together, thinking of ideas, and they thought this will work. And then it's just kind of, it started as just the physical, and it's just evolved ever since up to now. So a good five years evolving.
And is the 180, as in like, turn things around, like spin 180, or is it something different?
Yeah, so it basically, I think the catchphrase, well, I don't know if you have known the catchphrase, is turn your life around 180 degrees. So it's like if you were in a scale.
This is an audio podcast. So your hand gestures will mean nothing.
If you were to imagine like a what do you call it?
A straight angle, like you're flipping yourself. Yeah, yeah.
You're changing completely into the opposite direction.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
180 degrees.
And so, Pete, like most workouts, pretty much any workout that I do, the last thing that I want to hear is either halfway, almost halfway, just over halfway, being shouted by the coach. Yeah. So like when you hit numbers on the road to 100, like when you hit 25, were you like, fuck, why didn't I just leave it at 30? Or when you hit like 50, were you like, fuck sake, I'm only halfway? Cause like, I've been like that where if I have to do 120 reps of something and I'm on like 59, I'm like, oh Jesus, I'm not even at halfway and I already feel like this. So like, are you blocking out the milestones as you hit them, or are you using them? Are you like, okay, that's five down, that's only like 95 to go, or are you like not thinking about it until you get to 95?
I wish I had that positive. And I remember thinking, I think the first one, and I thought, I've really fucked up here. I've been off more than I can chew. And then I hit 10, and I thought, yeah, this is the worst decision of my life.
I remember hitting 10.
And I just, everyone was asking me, how many have you got? How many have you done? I'm like,
10.
11. Or, please stop asking me that. I'm going to October. We're in like July, August, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I hit 50, I actually felt good. And weirdly enough, I'm doing a lot of like engine-based work. I started noticing the carryover as well in my normal training. So I started seeing like the positive aspects of it. So when I hit 50, I was feeling better about doing them and actually sort of enjoying the process. And I think it's because I was developing a routine with it.
Yeah, I suppose your body would adapt as well, and your systems would, your central nervous system would just be like, oh, it's this again after a certain amount of time.
Like, yeah, and like even just doing them physically, like each one at a time, I couldn't look at the screens.
Did you do them in the same order every time? Like, did you always do row? Oh, fucking hell.
So the rowing for me was the worst because it's 7K.
Yeah.
It's long, it's boring. And I used to get, obviously, thumb tape, and I used to just program 7K in and just cover the screen because it depressed me. But I knew once I hit 30 minutes, I could take off the sticker and I'd be on towards the end.
And the screen would have turned off.
Yeah, start again. But then, yeah, so the rowing sucked. Bike I enjoyed, which everyone thinks is weird, but that for me, I like the bike.
Is your, did you switch, like say, was it availability of machines that made you swap between the two bikes, or did you do like one day assault, one day, or how did you?
I did 99 on the assault bike, because we don't have a Concept 2 bike here, and I went to CrossFit Gritstone, trickiest place in Manchester to jump in on one there, and they had the Concept 2, and I thought, do you know what, I'm going to give this a go, or it was the worst, that was horrendous. It just felt, and I've used them before, and I thought that this will be easier, but the air bike, the way that I did the air bike was more like an EMOM. I did 30 seconds, about 85-90% going for it, and then 30 seconds hands off, let my feet just tick over, about 40 RPM. Well, the Concept 2 bike, I found it really hard to find it here.
Sorry, you did 300 calories on the assault bike in sprints?
Yeah.
Fuck sake.
But for me, broke it up. If I was just trying to do one pace on the assault bike, it would have took me forever. Mm. Whereas I felt better doing 25, 30 seconds, gunning it a bit, and then 30 seconds recovering, hands off, just let my feet carry it over. And it just flew by that. Maybe I was weird. I think I was weird. I found it.
I did, I watched Star Wars on the assault bike once. during lockdown, because we had we rented a bike off the gym, and I was like, I don't know, I just thought it would be a good idea. And I remember every time I looked down the screen being so disappointed. I was like, oh, I'm gonna like break it, I'll do so much. And then like 20 minutes into the movie was shite, and like 20 minutes in I couldn't hear anything, like for most of it. So I had headphones in, but I still couldn't hear anything. And if I moved a certain distance, I pulled the laptop off the counter because I was too far away. But I remember I was so disappointed. I was on like 999 calories.
Yeah.
And I was so disappointed because it just went back to zero. I was like, my wife was like, don't forget to take a picture of the screen because you like to remember the fact that you did it. And, you know, like probably post about it. Because that's the way the world works. And I was like, oh, I'll take one when I'm finished. And I went back to fucking zero. And I was like, oh. I was like, so I did like 12 calories in like 2 hours. Yeah. So, no, I can't. Jesus Christ, I didn't realize you did a sprint. That must have been, yeah. Although I suppose it's better, like I say, it is a better form of training. I suppose like a long, arduous slog on the bike, you're going to get more from it if you're doing it in sprint, especially in the assault bike.
And I think more mentally than anything. Obviously, a few people did it alongside me. I had members just jumping in and said, oh, I'll keep you company. But they didn't want to do the EMOM version because
they were out for a Sunday cycle. But
then I could see them just having the worst day of their lives when they were just trying to find one pace on the air bike and 20 minutes in and you sort of 2/3 of the way through.
It's the easiest thing to slow down on as well. Like, of all the machines, it's the easiest one to not realize your RPM is dropping so low, and then, like, you know, you're into negative calories. That used to be my challenge in the warm up in the gym. We'd have 2 minutes on the machine, and I'd always challenge myself to see how low a number of calories I could do in 2 minutes.
That could be our next challenge.
It's more manageable. So, like, speaking of next challenges, you mentioned at the start that you like challenging yourself, and that you've done challenges in, like, you know, different forms. I suppose it's how it led to the start of Battle Cancer, and it's how it led to you doing this. Like, why, like, what is it about challenges? Like, is it a test to see, like, what you can do, what you're capable of doing yourself? Is it a test to see what change you can bring about through the challenge, like, for other things around you? Or is it I'm just trying to think, like, why someone would consistently do challenges. As, like, I'd understand someone saying, like, I'm going to do Murph every day for a month. I mean, I don't really understand it, but I can kind of get it. And then, like, not, that's it. But, like, to consistently do one, like, almost annually, like, is there something about your personality, do you think, that, like, brings you back to it? Or, like, why?
I think so. Sounds like I'm broken, this thing. But yeah, a lot of it, if I'm being honest, is, yeah, the raising the awareness is the core of what it's about. But from a personal point of view, it's that accountability. And I don't make it no big secret that I have suffered from, like, sort of mental health problems, and sort of, like a lot of people have in the past, struggled with various aspects of things. So this has been, these challenges are almost like a bit of a therapy for me, and I can put my teeth into it. And it's quite addictive, which is quite fitting for this. But so for me, it's the mental well-being characteristics of what I'm doing that I find really rewarding on a personal level, and I find it really satisfying as well that I can set my mind to do something and I won't stop until it's done.
Have you ever not completed one?
Not complete a challenge?
Yeah.
No, I've always. If I want to do something, I'll do it. And because I the feeling of afterwards, you can feel invincible. It sounds bad, but my training in particular, it helps me attack my training differently. Whereas before this challenge, I wasn't in the best place mentally. My training was down. I felt a bit sluggish. I had no drive, wasn't there. And I'm not talking about just competitions, just in general, just so you feel a bit crap sometimes. You feel a bit
kind of floating.
A bit like sort of no real purpose here. And then I got this opportunity to come here at Delta Fox, take on this new identity as a coach, whilst this triathlon's sort of evolved. And it's given me that sort of, that's, surge and a new passion for it all again. So on one hand, raising awareness, fundraising, brilliant. From a selfish point of view, from what I'm getting out of it, it's been a bit of a game changer. So these challenges, are a lot of them, it's for me as well, to see what I can push myself in and trying to sharpen that mental fortitude and that mental resilience and keep myself on that sort of straight path, if you will.
Yeah. Like, I think there's no such thing as a selfless act. So I think it's good that you've recognized that there's something in it for you as well. Like, you know, that you're gaining from it. Yeah. On, like, multiple levels, it sounds like, you know, the physical and the mental side of things. Because, yeah, I think it's very easy to trick yourself into thinking, like, I'm only doing it for other people. Whereas, like, I've yet to hear of anyone doing anything that was entirely selfless. Like, that they, you know, like, people say, like, oh, it's a selfless act. And then 5 minutes later, it's like, the fucker never said thanks. It's like, I thought it was a selfless act. So I'm assuming then COVID and lockdown and everything, which was, like, quite abruptly harsh in the UK at the start, I'm assuming that had an adverse effect on your ability to be able to roll out 180 to people who needed, and to get people in who needed to be in. I'm assuming that like, you know, the people that spring to mind that would struggle most with a lockdown would be people with mental health difficulties, like mental illness, who are elderly and alone, and people who have addiction problems.
Yeah, it was a massive like spanner in the works, I think, when it all came crashing down. But we just adapted, you know, we could offer the physical sessions on Zoom, so it was brilliant. Because, yeah, you know, it takes some grit and, you know, will from yourself to kind of get your laptop open and do burpees and things in your front room on a carpet. You know, these guys were doing all sorts of crazy stuff on Zoom.
Yeah.
And then we offered the group work as well, so they had a session to talk on Zoom. You know, it wasn't necessarily at that point then about learning. It was more about talking, you know, and communicating, telling everyone where they were at, coming around each other on a virtual platform. And like you said, people are on their own. So we had, you know, community nights, quizzes, or just, you know, a general meet-up where we'd all sit and have a meal together on Zoom. All these wacky, crazy ideas, but it worked. You know, we actually retained so many participants through it.
That's great.
But yeah, adapted, and it did work. It was great.
Do you find any of the participants are ever reluctant to, like, do they ever go quiet around you, Pete, because they know you're a policeman? Are they ever like, oh, shit, shh, like, whispering when you come into the room?
It's kind of, it's not.
Or have you had anyone, because I know you work with rehabilitation for people who've been in prison and stuff as well, have you had anyone who you've arrested in the past come to?
What's really good about how they do it is that they don't identify, me as a cop. So I'm a coach, and most of them don't know what I do. But what we do every so often is we have a breaking down barriers.
At the end of the cohort.
So the end of the process, we have a competition where they can take part, members can take part, like a four-person team, and we invite cops who are CrossFitters. And they end up becoming like team captains, and they get allocated people at random. So we have this team of a cop, a Delta Fox member, plus a participant on the 180s, and maybe someone else from the local authority or the gym itself. And straight away, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know you were in the police. But because they've not been aware of that. They've already formed their own judgments. They've already formed as a person, and hopefully it's nice, but so that kind of works. It's only after the fact that they know that I'm a cop, and that it works on both levels, that, because we're not, that judgment's kind of gone, and it's no longer cops and robbers and chasing one another through the streets. It's, do you know what, we're going to work out together, and you're going to get me through this, and I'm going to get you through this, and it creates this new dynamic that goes a long way to, especially the criminal justice system, the way that it is at the minute, breaking down barriers, and that's exactly what it does.
I was looking on the website as well, so there's, you offer like group programming for numerous, so like you obviously have the in-house, as in like come to Delta Fox and, you know, like be part of the in-person program or whatever, but you also offer for like rehabilitation centers and prisons and stuff, you offer programming as well, is that right?
Do you mean commercially or
through Project 180? I saw there was like you could apply to have like the program ran in, like, outsourced or whatever.
I think that's these are conversations that are developing at the minute. So we're looking at taking the project, for instance, into prisons. I think at the minute we're trying to gauge interest and trying to gauge create conversations with areas where we think 180 would work. And obviously, speaking from a policing point of view, this program would be fantastic in a prison setting. So once they come out of prison, they're already part of this community, as opposed to going back to their old community.
Instructive
for them. They've got this new identity and new sort of way of life. So, yeah.
Well, it builds in a routine into their day as well, where it's like you've got class at whatever time.
Exactly. So these are conversations that are happening now, and this awareness raising that we're doing is hopefully going to spark a few more with different areas where the 180 could we believe could work.
And we're looking at like preventative measures as well. So it's like we work with like local youth groups and try and drill in this, you know, look after yourself, take this path. You know, we're offering them opportunities to take part in things we offer to kind of prevent that life cycle from developing. And it's great to see some of the guys that have come through, the younger guys who came in with the hoods up, wouldn't look at you, wouldn't speak to you, disregarded you, not through simply being rude, but that self-worth of, oh gosh, I'm, you know, I shouldn't be here. And then it's like now they're bantering with you, they're saying, oh, I can do more pull-ups than you. And, you know, it's brilliant. And they're getting that feel-good from being physical and being around people, not from, you know, being on the streets and smoking and more negative kind of behaviour patterns. So we really want to, you know, work with prison, but we also want to do that work with youth and prevent them from going on a wrong path.
Yeah, because I saw CrossFit rolled out like scholarships for disadvantaged areas for like level ones and stuff, and I thought that would be a great thing to have like globally rather than just in the States. Like it'd be good to have that in like other areas. I don't know how, like you'd have to means test it or something, but I think it'd be good thing to roll out. Okay, well look, we'll finish with a quick fire.
Okay.
So I thought this was just going to be Pete. So I will go every second question. Fee, ski or row?
Ski.
Pete, clean or snatch?
Snatch.
Fee, bike or run?
Bike.
Thrusters or burpees, Pete?
Thrusters.
Oh, we've had this conversation.
Yeah.
Bench or squat?
Oh, squat all day.
And then coach or cop?
Ooh. Coach. I'm going to leave the
job now. I spent the last, I'd say, intermittently for the last 10 minutes of the interview thinking, if I ask her the first question, will he answer the last question? Or if I ask her the second question, will he answer that? And I kept doubting myself because I get distracted halfway. I'd be like, I'm a fucking teacher. And I was like, there's six questions. It shouldn't be this difficult for me to work it out. But I kept getting distracted. Then I'd be like, wait, what did I say? The first one or the second one? So yeah. Look, thanks. Thanks, Amanda, for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time out. I think what you're doing is amazing. It's something that I definitely have no shame in admitting that I have a high level of ignorance towards, where I just thankfully I've never been affected by it, and nobody I know has ever been directly affected by it. But it is something I would like to know more about, and if there's ever anything I can do, presumably you're going to do something else stupid like at some point next year, so let me know. There's nothing I can do to help, whatever way I can do to raise awareness. I think it's something that should be rolled out in different areas and not just be left where you guys are. I think it's something that is needed in a lot of different places. So yeah, best of luck with everything, and congratulations on finishing your latest in a long list of challenges.
Thanks very much, appreciate it.